my eye. Ranger wiped the tear away.
We need to get out of here. Can you leave?
Yes. I turned to Grandma. Are you okay with leaving now?
I am, Grandma said. I want to go home and watch some television. I'm worn out.
Ranger herded us through the crowded house and out the front door. A shiny black Mercedes sedan was idling in the middle of the street, guarded by a uniformed range man. It's good to be you, I said to Ranger.
Sometimes, Ranger said.
He drove to my parents' house, and I walked Grandma to the front door and gave her a hug. I love you, I said to Grandma.
I love you too, Grandma said. Maybe that's why God gave us death, so we remember to love what's alive.
I returned to Ranger, and he handed me a worn-out black leather wallet and some keys.
I took these off Salgusta before I handed him over to the police, he said. One of the keys is for a Ford Escape rental. I found it parked on a side road in the cemetery. The rental papers were in the glove compartment, listing the renter as Lou Ballou. The address he gave is fake, but we ran a search and found a Lou Ballou owning a row house on Sedge Street.
That's by the Button Factory.
Yes. Eventually the police will discover it, and I want to get there first.
He could have stolen the identity, I said.
It doesn't look like stolen identity. It looks like an alias for a safe house. There's no history for Lou Ballou. He's owned the house for almost 20 years. No mortgage.
What about the wallet? Anything helpful in there?
Expired driver's license and $7.
Chapter 24. The Button Factory was on the other side of town, and Sedge Street was part of a rabbit warren of what used to be company housing. Ranger parked one house down from the small, single-story house Lou Ballou owned. We watched the area for 5 minutes and went to the door. No one answered Ranger's knock, so he opened the door with one of the keys he took from Salgusta. The living room was small with worn-out, dated furniture, an overstuffed couch and chair, an ancient television, a dark, threadbare oriental rug, a couple of side tables. A pair of men's sneakers with Velcro latches in place of laces had been kicked off and left by the couch. The dining room table was scarred with scratches and rings from glasses. 4 side chairs. Clutter on the table. Used paper plates. Crumpled to-go bags from fast food places. Newspapers. Benzene canisters. A laptop computer. A jumble of pliers, hammers, knives, and drills. Some were beginning to show signs of rust. Ranger pulled on gloves and powered up the computer.
Without taking the time to recover deleted files or comb through his browser history, I'm not seeing a whole lot on this computer, Ranger said.
He shut the computer, and we moved into the kitchen. Old appliances, not especially clean. Mold in the refrigerator, plus some deli ham, a loaf of bread, a bottle of vodka. Junk in the junk drawer, silverware in the silverware drawer, mismatched glasses and plates in the above-counter cupboards. Some inexpensive pots and pans that looked 50 years old. A bag of Chips Ahoy on the counter. No slips of paper with cryptic messages that might be a clue.
Did you ask him about the clue when you took him down? I asked Ranger.
Yes, but he was babbling nonsense.
What about his house in the burg?
His sister is living in it. I had a team go through it when she was out, and it was clean. Nothing that could be a clue or indicate he had other properties. We went through Charlie Shine's house, too, when his wife was gone.
We searched the bedroom and bathroom and didn't find anything.
Maybe he didn't keep the paper, Ranger said. He could have committed it to memory.
Benny said it was a ritual to put the paper in the safe when someone died. I think Salgusta would have kept the paper.
We've already been through the molehole, but we can take another look, Ranger said.
We were on our way out of the house, and I stopped short.
His lazy boy chair. If he hid it anywhere in the molehole, it would be in his chair, and the chair is gone, Shine redecorated.
We buckled ourselves into the Mercedes, and Ranger called Tank.
Find out what Shine did with the Lazy Boy chairs when he redecorated, Ranger told Tank. Maybe the bartender knows.
I leaned back in the cushy leather seat and closed my eyes.
I need to go home, I said. I'm tired of smelling like cooked Porsche turbo. I want to take a shower and change my clothes.
And I wanted to have 4 or 5 peanut butter sandwiches and a beer.
Stick a fork in me.
Potts was slouched against the wall by my door. I can't believe you're here, I said. He stood straight and shoved his hands into his pockets.
Yeah, me either.
I opened the door and we went inside.
You're all smudgy, he said.
Long story short, there was a car fire, but I got out okay.
That had to be scary.
I'm getting used to scary.
Really?
He asked. No, I said. Not even a little. I took my crossbody bag off and removed my phone, happy that I'd been wearing the bag when I jumped out of the flaming Porsche. I'm having a late lunch, I said to Potts. Do you want something to eat?
No, thanks. I had a gluten-free granola bar a little while ago.
Beer?
There's gluten in beer.
I made myself a peanut butter sandwich on bread that had extra gluten added to it. I gave a little piece to Rex, and I cracked open a beer. I put the television on for Potts, and I took the sandwich and beer into the bathroom with me. My hair was singed on one side, but it wasn't as bad as I feared. I showered and did the whole glam hair thing. I got dressed in my old jeans and t-shirt and felt pretty good. Benny had died, but Grandma and Potts were okay. And truth is, Benny's death was sad and unfortunate, but it wasn't unexpected. I went to the living room to check on Potts, and Ranger called.
Tank talked to the bartender at the molehole, Ranger said. The chairs went to a consignment store. We're tracking them down. Tank also found out that Shine brought in more soldiers, supposedly some very bad guys. So be careful. Your Honda has been detailed and is parked in your lot.
Now what?
Potts asked when I pocketed my phone. Now we go to the office. I was vigilant leaving my apartment and getting into the Honda. I drove to the office with an eye on my rearview mirror. I parked directly in front of the large plate glass office window, and I could see Connie and Lula look out when I pulled to the curb.
If you didn't show up in the next 10 minutes, I was going to call you, Connie said when we walked in. I heard about Benny. They're saying it was a heart attack.
Grandma and I were with him when it happened, I said. The house was jammed with people, and he was hiding in his den. He said he didn't feel well, and then he was gone.
Mom and I went to the service, Connie said, but we passed on the burial and the reception. I knew the reception would be impossible in his house.
Did you hear about the fire at the funeral?
Fire at the funeral? Lula asked. What fire? What did I miss?
Grandma and I were in the car line leaving the gravesite, and we saw Salgusta hanging out by the Rigolini plot. We took off after him, and he caught us with the flamethrower setting the car on fire. The good part is that Ranger ran him down and turned him over to the police, so he's off the street. One less crazy killer to worry about.
That leaves Shine, Lula said. Crazy in his own way.
For his entire adult life, Shine's made money and stayed out of jail by intimidating people and making them disappear, I said. He has no reason to believe it won't work now.
Yeah, but your Honda is at the curb, Lula said. What about the car fire?
We were in Ranger's Porsche.
If I had a quarter for every Ranger car you destroyed, I'd be rich, Lula said.
Connie turned her attention to the front window.
We have company, she said.
We went to the window and looked out. The black Mercedes sports car was parked behind mine. It pulled into traffic and drove away when we went to the window. Gabriella again, I said.
I see her in your parking lot sometimes, Potts said. One time I asked her what she was doing there, and she said she was hanging out, that it was a quiet place to think.
Did she say anything else? I asked him.
She wanted to know what I was doing there, and I told her about you and how I was protecting you.
And?
She said she thought that was wonderful and that I was heroic.
Did she ever have anyone with her? Connie asked.
No, Potts said, She's always alone.
Did you happen to notice her handbag? Was it Fendi? Lula asked Potts.
I didn't notice, Potts said. One time she had a gun laying out on the passenger seat. It was partly hidden by a laptop, but I could still see it.
And she has no history? I asked Connie. None that I can find, Connie said. All we have is Gabriella, no last name. I ran the plate on the Mercedes, but didn't come up with much. It's a New York plate registered to an LLC that has no history. No corporate offices listed. I'm sure the information can be found somewhere, but my search programs aren't designed to go there. I could probably get her last name from Morelli, but I had to be careful how I went about it. I didn't want to embarrass myself by admitting I was spying on him. I placed the call and got a stomach flutter when he answered. Hey, I said.
Where are you?
At the office.
You rushed out of Benny's house before I had a chance to reconnect with you,
Morelli said. Ranger had a lead that we wanted to chase.
Speaking of Ranger, he turned Salgusta over to Manny Bartok, one of the other cops on the scene, and Manny said Salgusta didn't have a wallet or keys on him. I don't suppose you know anything about that.
Maybe they fell out of his pocket when Ranger took him down. Did Manny look around for them?
I'll pass your suggestion on to Manny.
I'm being sort of stalked by a woman we only know as Gabriella. No last name. I saw you talking to her at the viewing.
Gabriella Rose,
Morelli said.
She carries credentials from a bank in Switzerland, and supposedly she's investigating some illegal accounts, but I'm not sure I buy it.
I took that in for a beat. What's your opinion of her?
She'd eat her young. If she's following you around, you want to be careful and not let her get close.
Jeez.
Are we still on for dinner?
Sure.
I'll pick you up at 6 o'clock,
Morelli said.
How'd that go?
Lula asked when I put my phone away. Good, I said. Her name is Gabriella Rose, and she told Morelli she's investigating some illegal Swiss bank accounts. Connie typed Gabriella Rose into her search program.
Nothing, Connie said. No history for Gabriella Rose. Either it's a new alias or it's been scrubbed. Maybe both.
Ranger called.
We found the chairs and we have the clue, he said.
Let me guess, I said, under the seat cushion.
Yes. Do you want the clue over the phone or do you want the paper?
Over the phone is good.
50. The number 50. And it's the second clue.
What about the other chairs? Any more clues?
No more clues, but we found a party favor condom and some loose change.
Do you have any ideas? I asked him.
Only that these clues are directions, like a map. The six men probably knew Jimmy well enough to be able to follow the clues when they were all put together.
I agree.
Babe,
Ranger said. And he disconnected.
I hate to bring this up, Connie said, but you have Arnold Rugalowski outstanding. I ran a credit check on him today just for giggles and discovered a car loan.
Local?
Yeah, I followed through on it and it looks like he bought a food truck.
Maybe he's selling fried roaches, Lula said. It could be a new specialty being that his chicken nuts were lacking.
I don't have any more information other than his loan application, Connie said.
Did it say where he was buying the truck?
Steve's used and abused, Connie said.
I know where that is, Lula said. It's across from the pawn shop in Hamilton Township. It's right on the highway.
I tried calling, but I got a machine and no callback, Connie said.
Okay, I said. We'll check it out. Lula and Potts got into my Honda, and I drove to Steve's. I kept one eye on the rearview mirror, and every now and then I would get a flash of a black sports car that was 4 or 5 cars behind me. I turned into Steve's lot and lost sight of the black car.
You can let me handle this one, Lula said. I'm wearing my extra voluptuous spandex dress today, and I got away with used car salesmen and their sort.
Lula got out of the Honda and sashayed off to the sales hut. 5 minutes later, Lula walked out of the sales hut, adjusting her girls on the way to the car. She slid onto the passenger seat and buckled in.
Steve wasn't there, but his assistant Lewis said Arnold is looking to cruise the area by the government buildings on the river,
Lula said. Did Lewis say anything else about Arnold?
Only that he bought a beast of a truck. I don't exactly know what he meant by that. I was on my way out by then.
I took Nottingham to Clinton and headed for the Capitol buildings. It was late afternoon, and there would be end-of-workday traffic in town. I wasn't sure how this translated into food truck sales. I reached State Street and rolled past a taco truck and a donut truck. Neither truck looked like a beast, and we didn't see Arnold in either truck.
"Holy cow," Lula said. "I think that's got to be the truck up ahead parked on the corner. That's a seriously ugly truck. That's a beast truck."
"Are you sure it's a food truck?" I asked.
"There are a couple people standing by it, and they're eating something," Lula said. "And in between all the graffiti on the side, I think it says chicken nuts and bull balls."
"It looks like it used to be an EMT truck or a police truck," Potts said. "About 100 years ago. Or maybe it got caught in a riot."
"Looks like a giant Hummer that got a nose job," Lula said. "So how are we going to do this since we know he's a dangerous armed felon?"
"We aren't going to provoke him," I said. "I'm going to ask him if he's reconsidered and wants to reschedule. If he says no, we'll leave and come back tomorrow. And we'll continue to come back until he says yes."
"What if he never says yes?" Lula asked.
"We'll go to Plan B."
"What's Plan B?"
"I'm working on it."
"You don't have a Plan B," Lula said. "We all know you don't have a Plan B. The man is out here selling bull balls to people, and we don't have a Plan B."
"Bull balls might be okay if they're cooked properly," Potts said. "I would be reluctant to eat them, but I could see where they might have some nutritional value."
"I'm pretty sure they aren't really bull's balls," Lula said. "Bull's balls might be hard to come by. It's not like they sell them in the supermarket. I never saw bull's balls in the meat section."
I parked behind the truck, and we all got out. A window had been carved out of the side of the truck, and Arnold was handing someone a cardboard bucket of something. Lula and Potts stood back, and I stepped up to the window. "Hey, Arnold," I said. "How's it going?"
"Long time no see," Arnold said.
"Nice truck you've got here."
"It's a beast," Arnold said.
"Appropriate for selling bull balls." Arnold grinned.
"Yeah. I like your hair. You got it cut short. It's pretty."
"Thank you. I was wondering if you wanted to reschedule your court date."
"I've been thinking about it," Arnold said. "I just re-up, right?"
"Right. We bond you out a second time with a new date."
"Now that I got my new business going and I'm my own boss, I guess I could do that."
"Close up and we'll give you a ride."
"I can't do that. I can't leave my truck here. They'll tow it. I'll close up and follow you."
"That don't sound like a good idea," Lula said to me. "I don't trust him. He threw chicken nuts at me and he shot at me."
"Yeah, sorry about that," Arnold said. "I was having a rough day."
Okay, so Plan A wasn't perfect. Turns out there's some unfounded trust involved. Unfortunately, I didn't have a lot of options. As long as he was in the truck and I was standing on the sidewalk, I couldn't pull a sneak attack with my stun gun. I wasn't going to instigate another gunfight. And even with the three of us combined, I didn't think we could wrestle him down to the ground and cuff him. "It's just a couple blocks through town," I said to Lula. I gave him a thumbs up, and we all went back to the Honda. After a couple of minutes, he waved at me from his driver's side window, and I pulled in front of him. He followed me for two blocks. I stopped for a light, and he didn't. He gave me a gentle bump on my back bumper and inched me forward into a school bus. Potts turned in his seat and waved at Arnold.
"He's laughing," Potts said, "and he gave me the finger."
The school bus was pushed forward slightly by my Honda, but was stuck behind a long line of cars.
"I think he's gonna smush us," Potts
said, shouting over the sounds of crunching metal and fiberglass. The Honda hood buckled and popped open, and Arnold kept pushing. "Everyone out," I said. "He's not stopping. He's insane." We all jumped out. Arnold tooted his horn, gave us a little finger wave, and backed up. He made a U-turn over the curb and sidewalk and drove away.
"It's not so bad," Potts said, looking at the crumpled Honda. "You could probably straighten it out."
"It's 2 feet shorter than it used to be," Lula said.
I called Ranger. Chapter 25 Ranger and Tank were standing hands on hips, looking at the Honda. Ranger had changed out of the suit he wore for the funeral, and he and Tank were wearing the usual uniform of Rangeman black cargo pants and insignia shirt. Very badass.
Let me get this straight, Ranger said. Arnold said he was going to follow you to the municipal building.
Yes.
And when you stopped for a light, he pushed you into the school bus.
Yes.
And then he drove away.
Yes.
In a food truck.
Yes.
Potts and Lula were next to me.
He was laughing, and he gave us the finger, Potts said. I think he wanted to squish us.
He's evil, Lula said. He's an evil person, and he can't cook neither.
Ranger looked at me.
Yes, I said.
Would you like me to take charge here so you might have a word with Arnold?
Tank asked Ranger.
It's all yours, Ranger said. Make sure Lula and Potts have a ride home. I'm taking your SUV. Call for another car.
Ranger turned to me.
Does this guy have an address?
He gave 43 South Clinton Street as his address on his bond application, but that turned out to be bogus. He had to give an address when he got the loan and registered his truck, so maybe Connie can pull that for us. I knew where he was hanging with the food truck, so that's where I went.
Where was the food truck?
A couple blocks down, across from the government buildings.
Hard to believe he'd go back there. Have Connie get a home address.
I called Connie while Ranger drove down State Street. We passed several food trucks, but not Arnold's. We got to the end of the government complex, and Connie texted me an address. North Trenton, I said to Ranger. Leicester Street. Ranger turned off State, and I called Morelli. I'm going to have to cancel dinner, I said. Business.
Treasure business?
Morelli asked. Arnold Rugalowski business. He's the cluck-in-a-bucket cook who fed fried roaches to his ex-wife. He's FTA.
Do you have someone watching your back? Word on the street is that Shine brought in more reinforcements, and they aren't nice guys.
I'm covered. I'll call later to reschedule. I disconnected, and Ranger glanced over at me.
I don't care about the Honda or my Porsche, he said. But I'm starting to worry about your car, Karma.
My bad car, Karma, is the tip of the iceberg. Leicester Street is a slightly shabby street in a perfectly respectable section of North Trenton. The tiny front lawns are neglected. The paint has faded and has begun to peel on many of the houses. The cars in front of the houses are splotched with Bondo and rust patches, with the exception of the car in front of 207 Leicester. The car in front of 207 Leicester was a grossly ugly food truck. This is it, I said to Ranger. He idled alongside the truck and read the writing that was almost hidden behind graffiti.
Chicken nuts and bull balls?
His specialty, I said. Ranger parked, and we went to Arnold's door and rang the bell. The door was wrenched open, and Arnold glared out at us.
What?
I showed Arnold my fake badge. Bond enforcement. Arnold stood half a head taller than Ranger, had him outweighed by about 100 pounds, and was holding an 8-inch chef's knife. He was wearing a sleeveless gray t-shirt and gray sweatpants, and he looked like Sasquatch on a bad hair day.
Get lost, Arnold said. Go away or I'll gut you like a fish.
Ranger told Arnold to put the knife down. Arnold lunged at Ranger, and Ranger stepped aside and tagged Arnold with a stun gun. Arnold dropped the knife and looked a little confused, but he didn't go down.
Your turn, Ranger said to me. Go for it.
I didn't have any weapons, so I kicked Arnold in the knee.
Ow, Arnold said. Now I'm going to have to kill you.
Ranger stomped on Arnold's sneakered foot, and when Arnold looked down, Ranger sucker punched him with an uppercut that snapped his head back. Arnold shook his head to clear the cobwebs, and Ranger cuffed him. Nice move with the foot stomp and uppercut, I said to Ranger.
Classic Three Stooges, Ranger said. I learn from the best of them.
Ranger tugged Arnold toward the door, and Arnold sat down on the floor.
I'm not going, Arnold said. You can't make me.
Ranger raised the charge on his stun gun, pressed it against Arnold's neck, and Arnold flopped onto his back.
You reached a couple neurons on that one, I said to Ranger.
I gave him enough volts to take down an elephant. Grab a foot.
We dragged Arnold out of the house and wrangled him into the rear cargo space of the fleet SUV. Then Ranger secured Arnold's ankles with shackles that were bolted to the floor. By the time we got to the police station, Arnold was on a rant, thrashing around as best he could, moaning and yelling obscenities. Ranger didn't seem to notice. I had the beginnings of a headache. Half an hour later, Ranger and I were back in the SUV, and I had my body receipt tucked into my bag.
Now what? Ranger asked.
Home. This has been a long day, long enough to feel like it's been 4 or 5 days.
The sun was low in the sky when Ranger drove into my building's parking lot. He paused at the back of the lot and looked at the cars already parked.
You know most of the tenants here, he said. Does anyone drive a black Escalade?
No.
There's an Escalade a couple rows in front of us. It looks like there are two men in it. One might be texting.
And you think they're waiting for me?
I think they're waiting for someone. There are several options. I can go up to them and ask if they're waiting for you. I can walk you to your door and deal with them on my way out. Or you can come home with me.
I'm going to pass on all those options and have you drop me at my parents' house. I can't keep destroying your cars and having you do my job for me. And as much as I love sleeping with you, I can't keep doing that either. Your life path is clear to you. I need to find some clarity about mine.
Understood, Ranger said. But I'm going to keep you under GPS surveillance. You're a walking disaster, and you're my only source of fun.
Understood, I said. I called Potts and asked if he was in front of my door.
Yes, he said. Are you coming home soon?
I'm not staying in my apartment tonight. How did you get there?
The rangeman guy dropped me off.
Come out the front door and I'll give you a ride home, I said. Do not go out the back door that goes to the parking lot.
My father was in his favorite chair in front of the television, sleeping off dinner. I found my mom and grandma tidying up the kitchen.
Look who's here, my mom said. We just finished dinner, but there's lots of leftovers.
I dropped my messenger bag on the floor by the kitchen table. Leftovers sound wonderful. Don't fuss. I can help myself.
It's no fuss, she said. We had pot roast and mashed potatoes, and everything is still warm. I'll just heat up the gravy.
I fixed a plate for myself and took it to the table. I thought I would stay here tonight if that's okay, I said. The pest control guy sprayed my apartment building today, and it smells like insecticide. Better to fib than to tell my mom about the two hitmen waiting to kidnap me.
My mother brought the hot gravy, and I poured it over everything.
When you were a little girl, you used to pour gravy on your dessert, Grandma said. Cupcakes, ice cream, apple pie.
I was a strange child, I said.
I like to think of you as uniquely creative, Grandma said. For a while there, you were convinced you could fly, and you always wanted to be a superhero. If we couldn't find a bath towel, we knew you were probably wearing it as a cape.
And here I am today, I said. Normal, boring Stephanie.
For goodness sakes, Stephanie, you're a bounty hunter. You track down killers and other horrible people. That's not normal. Normal daughters work in banks and button factories. They get married. They have children. They don't destroy cars once a week. They don't get their apartments and their parents' house firebombed. They don't go on crazy treasure hunts. They go on vacations down the shore.
She's right, Grandma said to me. You aren't normal.
Another piece has been fitted into the puzzle. I'm not normal.
On the subject of the treasure hunt, have you thought any more about the clues? I asked Grandma.
Acid, 50, Philadelphia, pink. And clues number 5 and 6 are missing, Grandma said. I think about them all the time, and I can't come up with anything. I've looked at maps of Philadelphia, and I can't figure it out. I'm not sure the last two clues would even help.
I had the same thought, but I wasn't going to say it out loud. And I was worried about the last clue.
This was Jimmy's clue, and we didn't have much hope of finding it. If Benny was right and Jimmy's clue was a safe combination, that was a game changer. Either we abandoned the treasure, or else a safe specialist was going to risk their life trying to open the safe. I finished eating and I took my place on the couch. Grandma sat beside me with a glass of sherry. My mother sat beside Grandma and worked on her Jack Daniel's Big Gulp. My father woke up and clicked the television on to a rerun of Jeopardy. We watched a couple of game shows, an hour of the Shopping Network, and we all went to bed. There are three small bedrooms and a communal bathroom upstairs. Grandma has taken over my sister Valerie's room, but my room is still untouched. It's precisely as I left it when I graduated from college and moved out of the house. T-shirts from high school and college are still in my bureau drawers, some underwear, some socks, a couple of pairs of jeans, clothes I didn't want at the time and still don't want. The bed was made, and the room was spotlessly clean. My mom and grandma couldn't have it any other way. I found pajamas with red hearts and was about to get ready for bed when Grandma came in and closed the door behind her. "I think I might have figured something out," she said. "I didn't want to tell you in front of your mother. She's all in a dither about this treasure hunt, and she probably would think I'm being silly and jumping to conclusions."
"What is it?"
"When your husband passes, one of the customs is to move your wedding band from your left hand to your right hand. I got two dead husbands, so I'm wearing both rings. Truth is, it doesn't feel right to have them so close together on my finger. It's not like they even knew each other. Anyway, I was washing my hands this afternoon, and I took my rings off. And I was looking at the rings on the counter by the sink and wondering what I should do about them. And this idea hit me. And I never said anything about this before, but the date on the inside of my band is wrong. I've been keeping Jimmy's band in a box in my underwear drawer next to the keys, and his band has the wrong date, too. It's not even the same as mine."
"Didn't you get the rings together?"
"No, it was so sudden. I thought we were going to the Bahamas to have a couple of nights of sin, but when we got there, he had it arranged to get married."
"And?"
"Maybe the numbers are his clue," Grandma said. "The lazy boys think he gave his clue to me, and the wedding bands are all I've got from him."
"Wow,
yeah," Grandma said. "Do you think that's crazy?"
"I don't know. What are the numbers? Do they make any sense to you?"
"That's the thing. They're just numbers."
Grandma took her ring off and handed it to me. The numbers inscribed on the inside were 2, 5, 20.
"And here's Jimmy's ring," she said, handing me a second ring.
His numbers were 11, 7, 20.
"The safe most likely needs numbers to go with the two keys," I said. "Maybe this is the safe combination."
"That would do us a lot of good, if we knew where the safe was," Grandma said.
Chapter 26. The house was quiet when I got up. My mom and grandma were at church, and my dad was at his lodge doing whatever men do at lodges. The coffee was still hot, and there was half an Entenmann's coffee cake on the kitchen table. I had coffee and cake, and I wrote a note to my mom that I was borrowing the Buick and returning to my apartment. 20 minutes later, I chugged into my building's parking lot and did a fast scan for unfamiliar cars. I'd had a restless night, thinking about Grandma's rings. She'd been accused of possessing not only the keys, but also a clue, and now it might turn out to be true. I took a shower and got dressed in old Stephanie clothes. Ratty t-shirt, worn-out jeans, sloppy gray hooded sweatshirt. It was Sunday, and the bonds office was closed, so I was going used car shopping. I found that it's best not to look successful when you shop for a used car. Uncle Matt's used car lot was 10 minutes away and opened at noon on Sunday. I wanted a car that was unremarkable. Not too flashy, not too shabby, not too big, and not too small. And it had to have good juju. Since I didn't seem to have a lot of good car karma, it would help if I could offset it with a car with good juju. I grabbed my messenger bag and headed out. The sky was blue, and the air was a perfect 75 degrees. I was parked toward the back of the lot, and the bulbous powder blue and white Buick was clearly visible when I stepped out of my apartment building. I walked past the first row of cars, and two men came out of nowhere.
"Mr. Shine would like to talk to you," one of them said.
My heart did a little flip, and it took a couple of beats for me to find my voice. "I would love to talk to Mr. Shine," I told him. "I can meet him at the bail bonds office anytime tomorrow."
"He wants to talk to you now," he said.
I stepped to the side and moved in the direction of the Buick. "Now isn't convenient." On the outside, I was putting up a pretty good show of "you don't scare me" nonchalance. On the inside, I was a mess. Rapid heartbeat and scramble brain. We were the only ones in the lot, and I doubted anyone would hear me if I started screaming. My phone was in the front pocket of my messenger bag. I reached for the phone, and he yanked the bag off my shoulder. "Hey," I said, "give it back." He dangled it in front of me.
"Make me."
He was in his late 20s and bulked up like a gym monkey in two tight dress slacks and a three-button collared knit shirt that was bursting at the seams over his pecs and biceps. The other guy was my height with no apparent muscle, wearing a slim-fit navy suit with a tapered leg. He had a jagged scar running from the outer corner of his eye to the bottom of his chin. The gun on his hip was too large for the cut of the suit. Neither of the men was attractive. Both of them looked like they were enjoying tormenting dumb little me.
"We're gonna take you for a ride now, sweetie pie," the gym monkey said. "You can come with us nice and easy, or Sanchez can stun gun you."
"Nice and easy," I said. He smiled and relaxed a little, and I sucker punched him in the throat. I hit him square in the Adam's apple, and his eyes almost popped out of his head. Truth is, I was as shocked as he was. My self-defense skills are sadly lacking, and I'd acted out of terrified desperation. I thought it was a miracle that I made contact, much less with such precision. He was gasping and choking, and before Sanchez could grab me, I was off and running. I couldn't get into the Buick because I didn't have my messenger bag with the key. I couldn't get into my building because they were between me and the building, so I ran across the lot toward a residential area. I could hear Sanchez running after me, but I had a head start, and I was motivated. I reached the edge of the lot, crossed the street, and ran for the nearest house. I ran up to the front door and hammered my fist on the door and yelled, "Help!" Sanchez caught up to me and reached out with the stun gun. I stumbled trying to get away from him and knocked us both off the small concrete and brick porch. I rolled away from him, tried to get to my feet, and he grabbed my ankle. I went into blind panic mode, screaming and thrashing around, trying to get free, and somehow managed to kick him in the face. Blood gushed out of his nose, or maybe his mouth. I didn't hang around long enough to find out which. I was on my feet and running again. I ran between two houses and cut across two backyards. I had no idea if he was following me or not. My heart was pounding so hard and my breathing was so labored, I couldn't hear a stampeding herd of buffalo if they were on my heels. I hid behind a detached single-car garage and bent at the waist to catch my breath. I peeked out and didn't see him. I stayed there until I no longer felt like throwing up, and then I ventured out. I heard a car cruise down the street. It didn't stop. I didn't hear any footsteps, no heavy breathing. I took the long way back to my apartment building, going one block over and coming into the lot from the service entrance. I paused behind an SUV and looked and listened. There weren't a lot of cars parked. Residents were out doing weekend things. This is good, I thought. Fewer places for the bad guys to hide. I could see my messenger bag lying on the ground by the Buick. I ventured out and was almost at the Buick when Sanchez and the gym monkey appeared from behind Mr. Mullen's ancient Lincoln town car.
"No more fun time," gym monkey said. "You run this time, and Sanchez is gonna shoot you."
Sanchez had a wad of tissue stuffed into his nose, and even at a short distance the nose looked crooked and his eyes were beginning to bruise and swell.
"I'm a crack shot," Sanchez said, "and I'm not going to shoot to kill. I'm going to shoot you someplace real painful, and then when we bring you to Mr. Shine, you're going to be cooperative, and maybe he'll let us play with you when he's done."
I'd skinned my knee when I fell off the porch, and I didn't know how much more running I had in me. I thought I might be able to dodge around a couple of cars and make it to my building's back door. If luck was with me, Sanchez wouldn't be a crack shot with a broken nose and swollen eyes. I ran for the nearest car, ducked down behind it, and Sanchez got off a shot that zinged over my head. I ran to another car, ducked down, and in my peripheral vision I caught a flash of black. It was Gabriella in the Mercedes. She sped past me and drove straight for Sanchez. He uttered something in Spanish and pointed the gun at the Mercedes. Gabriella slammed into him before he could get a shot off, punting him at least 20 feet. She skidded to a stop, put the car into reverse, and took down Jim Monkey. He went down with a cell phone in one hand and a gun in the other. Gabriella put the Mercedes into drive and ran over him a second time. I worried that I might be next, but she drove out of the lot and didn't look back. Sanchez wasn't moving. Jim Monkey was moaning a little, and there was what looked like leg bones sticking out of a tear in his trousers. I retrieved my messenger bag, ran into the building, and locked myself in my apartment. I walked to the window on shaky legs, looked down at the parking lot, and dialed 911. I told dispatch that a hit-and-run had occurred, but I hadn't gotten a good look at the car. I wasn't sure what to do about identifying Gabriella. She probably saved my life. Why was the big question. While I was on the line with 911, the blue pickup raced into the lot. A couple of young guys in jeans and t-shirts got out, scooped up Sanchez and Jim Monkey, and took off. "Hold on a minute," I said to dispatch. "The two hit-and-run victims just left. Sorry for the false alarm." I stood at the window for a couple of minutes, staring down at the empty pavement. Good thing my jeans were torn and my knee was bleeding, because otherwise I might think I hallucinated the entire episode. I went into the kitchen and searched for something comforting, settling on a handful of Fruit Loops and a spoonful of peanut butter. "My life is crap," I said to Rex. "On the other hand, I didn't just get run over by a car, twice. And I think my hair still looks good. Even Arnold Rugalowski thought it was pretty." No comments from Rex. I put a huge Band-Aid on my knee, changed into new jeans, and went back to the kitchen for more peanut butter. I was contemplating washing the peanut butter down with a beer, and I heard something bump against my front door. I looked out my peephole and saw the back of Potts's head.
"I had a feeling you were home," he said when I opened the door. "It was one of those telepathic things. So, what are we doing today?"
"I need to find Shine."
"That might be difficult."
"And I wouldn't mind talking to Gabriella."
"Sometimes she parks by the dumpster. She kind of hides behind it in her little car. It's like the stealth car."
"Was she there when you got here?"
"No, I didn't see her."
I thought she was probably getting the dents taken out of the Mercedes and having it detailed to get rid of the blood. I called Connie and asked if her mother had any thoughts on where Shine might be hiding.
"Mom isn't here," Connie said. "She's with Benny's sister. They're making the funeral arrangements. I'll ask if she's heard anything when she comes home."
"I had two of Shine's men try to kidnap me just now. Young, late 20s. One was bulked up with muscle and the other was thin. The thin one was named Sanchez and had a scar running the length of his face. They were trying to shoot me in my parking lot, and Gabriella came out of nowhere in her Mercedes and ran them over."
"For real?"
"Yeah, for real." Sanchez ended up a crumpled heap on the pavement, and the muscle guy had a compound fracture of his right leg. Probably a bunch of other body parts were also broken, but I couldn't see those. I was calling 911 when a blue pickup drove into the lot, scooped them both up, and drove off. "You have a lot of nurse contacts. Could you call around and see if they checked into any of the hospitals or clinics?"
"I'm on it," Connie said.
"Wow," Potts said when I hung up.
You didn't tell me any of that. I must have just missed it. Were they really shooting at you in the parking lot?
Only one of them.
So you're going to try to track down these guys and get them to tell you where to find Shine?
Yes. While Connie is checking hospitals and clinics, I'm going to check on the house in Ewing.
Do you think we should be doing this all by ourselves?
Potts asked.
Maybe we should get Lula. She has a gun.
I wasn't interested in Lula's gun. Half the time she couldn't find it in her massive purse. And if she did find it, chances of her hitting what she aimed at were zip. And that was usually a good thing. However, I could use her car. Her Firebird stood out, but it didn't shout Stephanie Plum like the Buick. Chapter 27. Lula was on the sidewalk in front of her apartment when I drove up. I parked the Buick, and Potts and I got out and transferred over to the Firebird.
I was surprised when you called, Lula said. I thought you'd be taking a day off after the funeral and the car squashing, and it sounded to me like you were at another dead end.
I told her about Shine's two thugs and Gabriella.
So you're ramping up the Shine search? Are you sure you don't just want to move to Santa Fe? I hear it's real nice there. You could get some kick-ass snakeskin cowboy boots.
The cowboy boots have some appeal, I said, but I'm a Jersey girl, and Jersey girls always get their man.
Fucking A, Lula said. Let's do it. Where are we going?
I gave Lula the address. She pulled away from the curb, and Potts started his nervous humming. He had a right to be nervous. He'd been punctured, shot at, and kidnapped. And in spite of all that, he was sticking with me. That took guts. There was strength of character buried under all his weirdness. Unfortunately, that didn't make him any less annoying.
If you don't stop humming, you're going to have to ride on the roof,
Lula said to Potts.
Is this going to be dangerous?
Potts asked.
I need to prepare myself if it's going to be dangerous.
How are you going to prepare? Lula asked him.
I might take a pill, Potts said. I have Xanax, Imodium, a multivitamin, Benadryl, lithium, and a couple orange pills that aren't entirely legal.
I'd go with the multivitamin, Lula said. It's a good start.
Yep, I said. Definitely the multivitamin. We got to the house and did a slow drive-by. There were no vehicles in the driveway, no activity on the street. Lula parked a couple of houses down, and we sat for 10 minutes. Okay, I said. I'm going to take a look around.
I'll go with you, Lula said.
Me too,
Potts said. No, it'll attract too much attention with all of us creeping around, I said. I'll signal you if I need backup.
What's the signal going to be?
Potts asked.
You could do a special bird whistle. Can you whistle?
I was thinking about waving my hand, I said.
Okay, Potts said. But if this gets made into a movie or a video game, we'll need something better.
I walked down the street to the safe house, went to the door, and rang the bell. No answer. The shades were open on the front windows. No one walking around, no television playing. I went to the backyard and looked in the kitchen window. No mess, no lights on, no dishes in the sink. The back door was locked. I returned to the car. It looks empty, I said. I couldn't see in the garage or in any of the bedrooms, but the downstairs is clean.
I could open a door for you if you want, Lula said. I'm real good with a screwdriver and a hammer.
You have a screwdriver and a hammer? I asked.
Of course I have a screwdriver and a hammer, Lula said. Who doesn't carry a screwdriver and a hammer? Actually, it's not a big hammer. It's more like a mini hammer, but it works fine if you put some muscle into it.
We left Potts in the car, and Lula and I walked around to the back of the house. We banged on the door, and when no one answered, Lula did her thing and popped the new door lock open.
You're right about it being clean, Lula said, looking in the refrigerator. Nothing much in here. Some mustard and ketchup.
We did a fast search of the rest of the house and found nothing. Closets were empty. No car in the garage. Trash had all been taken out.
They must have had one of those maid services come in here yesterday, Lula said. This little point's on the toilet paper like you see in a hotel. It doesn't look like the new guys were staying here. How many houses does Shine have?
Maybe the new guys don't need a house. Maybe they're local, Jersey or Pennsylvania. Hopefully Connie gets a hit at one of the hospitals. They got scooped up and tossed into a blue pickup. I didn't get a chance to check the plate, but it looked like the same truck Shine's nephew was driving.
Are you sure one of them wasn't the nephew?
Lula asked. I shook my head. They were new. We returned to the car, and Lula drove out of the neighborhood.
Now what? She asked.
The mole-hole, I said. Potts started humming, caught himself, and stopped.
Isn't that like walking into the hornet's nest? Lula asked.
Yes, I said. That's exactly what it is.
Okay, Lula said. I'm in.
Me too,
Potts said. There were only a handful of vehicles in the molehole parking lot, and none of them was a blue pickup, a white Taurus, a black Escalade, or a Mercedes sports car. It was mid-afternoon, and the dining area was empty when we walked in. The bar was half full, and a rhythm-challenged woman was on the pole. I went to the bar, and the bartender came over.
You again, he said.
I nodded. Nice to see you, too. Guess who I'm looking for?
Someone alive?
Yes.
That eliminates a bunch of people.
Do you know where he is?
I know where he isn't. He isn't here.
Suppose I wanted to talk to him. Where would I find him?
I'm a bartender. I don't know these things. Are you going to order or what?
Is anyone in the back room?
No, they're all out extorting money and killing people.
Do you know when they'll stop by?
When they get hungry.
I returned to Lula and Potts, and Morelli called.
Someone just dumped two bodies behind the bail bonds office, he said. One of them has a broken leg. I thought you might want to take a look at this.
Are they dead?
Yes.
I don't want to look.
Let me state this another way. I'm the principal on this, and I suspect you have information I would want.
Why would you suspect that?
You called a hit and run in this morning for two men, one of them having a broken leg. One of these men has a broken leg plus tire tracks on his trousers.
Crap. I'm out with Lula. I'm about a half hour away.
I'm not going anywhere. This is going to take a while. I'm waiting for the photographer and the medical examiner.
I need to go to a crime scene, I said to Lula. Take me back to the Buick. Potts and I transferred over to the Buick and waved adios to Lula. I dropped Potts off at his parents' house and drove to the bail bonds office. Morelli was standing inside the yellow tape when I got there. He motioned me over, and I ducked under the tape.
Sorry I had to make you do this, he said. I need the backstory. They aren't carrying any ID.
Both men were on their backs, sprawled at awkward angles. Shot once in the head and once in the chest. From the lack of blood at the scene, I was guessing they were shot somewhere else and then probably pitched off the pickup. They tried to kidnap me this morning when I came out of my apartment building, I said. They said Shine wanted to talk to me. I declined the invitation, they chased me around the neighborhood, and finally they pinned me down when I tried to return to my parking lot. The guy in the suit is named Sanchez. I don't know any more than that. He got off a shot at me. A car came out of nowhere and ran him over, and then ran the other guy over. The car sped off, and I went to my apartment and called 911. I was looking out the window talking to dispatch when a blue pickup drove into the lot, scooped both guys up, and drove away with them. The medical examiner arrived, and Morelli and I moved away from the taped-off area.
This is a classic Shine hit,
Morelli said.
Once in the head and once in the chest. If we can retrieve a bullet, I'm guessing it'll match the one we recovered from the dead hooker you found, Alice Smother. Schmidt interviewed her neighbor across the hall. He said Shine was living with Smother for a short time. He heard them arguing, and he assumed Shine moved out. He didn't see Smother after that.
Why would Shine kill her?
I can only speculate, but possibly Shine killed Smother for the same reason he killed these two. Shine has a reputation for getting rid of loose ends. Dead men tell no tales. They can't give you up to cop a plea bargain. In the case here, if he hadn't killed them, they would be getting medical attention. I'm taking a wild guess, but you probably have Connie calling around to find them.
and after you had a heart-to-heart with them, you would have turned them over to us, right?
Right.
And one more wild guess, Morelli said.
You know the driver of the hit-and-run car.
It wasn't Ranger.
And?
It was moving fast. All I can tell you is that it was black and it was small, not an SUV.
That narrows it down, Morelli said.
I left Morelli, walked around the block to the front of the building where my car was parked, and I called Connie.
Your men didn't check in at any of the clinics or hospitals, Connie said.
That's because they're dead, I said. Shot Shine execution style and dumped behind the office. I'm there now.
A bullet in the head and another in the chest? Connie asked.
Yes.
You'd think Shine would change it up once in a while.
Is your mom home? Did she hear anything helpful?
Jimmy's sister said Shine is in Atlantic City. He comes to Trenton when he has to, but mostly his crew goes to him.
Did she say where in Atlantic City?
She only knew that he was staying in someone's home. She said she heard it was one of his buddies from the old days. He was well-connected when he was younger, and he had a lot of friends. If you wanted a liquor license or a pizza at 3 a.m. for your pregnant wife or demanding girlfriend, Shine could make it happen.
Start collecting a list of his friends, I said. You make the phone calls and give me the names. I'll run the real estate searches.
Do you have those programs?
No, I'm on my way home. Send me links to whatever I need. I was back in the Buick. If Shine's henchmen came after me, I'd deal with it. If necessary, I could mow them down. If Gabriella could do it in a Mercedes sports car, I could for sure do it with the Buick. I had a few butterflies in my stomach when I pulled into my parking lot. That's okay, I thought. It's a reminder to be cautious, and it's good to be cautious. It's not good to be fearful. Fear isn't a productive emotion. I found a parking place close to the back door, and 3 minutes later I was in my apartment with the door locked. Cautious, but not afraid, I told myself. My new mantra. I grabbed a granola bar and a bottle of water, took them to the dining room table, and opened my MacBook. I downloaded the search programs from Connie, plus 3 names. I researched the 3 names and eliminated them. No real estate in Atlantic City. 4 more names came in from Connie. I ran them through the system. Nothing. It was 9 o'clock at night when I received the last batch of names from Connie. It was as if she downloaded the entire Trenton phone book and sent it to me. Out of all those names, I found 2 with Atlantic City residences. In both cases, they were second residences. 1 was a condo in a low-rise building. The other was a modest house in Pleasantville. I'd take a road trip in the morning.
Chapter 28. I opened the door to my apartment, and Potts tumbled in.
Sorry, he said. I was sitting with my back to your door, and I guess I fell asleep.
It's 8:30 in the morning. How long have you been out here?
Not that long, he said. An hour, maybe.
He got to his feet.
Where are you going? Are you going to the office?
Briefly. I need to see if Connie has anything new for me, and then I'm going to check out a couple of addresses. I locked my door and took the stairs to the lobby with Potts tagging along. I had my gun tucked into my messenger bag, but it wasn't loaded. I didn't have any ammo. Probably I could get some from Connie, just in case. Connie was at her desk and Lula was texting when I walked in with Potts. I got 2 possible addresses from your list, I said to Connie. I'm going to check them out this morning.
Me too,
Potts said.
Me too, Lula said. Where are we going?
Atlantic City, I said.
I'm all about Atlantic City, Lula said. Maybe we should bring Grandma with us. She's like my lucky charm. You got Grandma behind you at a craps table and you can't lose.
We aren't going to a casino, I said. I'm checking out 2 residences.
Yeah, but after that we might need something to eat and we could at least do some slots. I mean, we're going all that way, Lula said. I'll call Grandma and see if she's up for it.
I handed my gun over to Connie. Do you have any bullets that fit this? I asked. I thought I should start carrying it, just in case.
Just in case is a good possibility, Connie said.
She went to the storeroom and returned with a box of rounds. She loaded my .38, spun the cylinder, and handed it back to me.
Grandma's not answering her phone, Lula said.
I called my mother. No answer there, either. There were hundreds of reasons why they weren't answering their phone, but the worst stuck in my mind. We can stop at the house on our way out of town, I said. I parked in my parents' driveway and noticed that the front door was slightly ajar. I hit the ground running and entered the house with my gun in hand. I stopped in the foyer and listened. Silence. I cautiously walked through the living room and dining room and into the kitchen. One of the chairs by the kitchen table was overturned, and the cast iron fry pan was on the floor. I ran upstairs and looked in the bedrooms and the bathroom. They had all been searched. Drawers were open. Clothes were dumped on the floor. The keys were missing from Grandma's underwear drawer. The ring was still there in its box. They didn't know to take the ring. Lula was behind me.
What do you think?
She asked. I think they have Grandma.
That's what I'm thinking too, Lula said.
I pocketed the ring and we went downstairs. Grandma was standing in the foyer holding a grocery bag.
This is a nice surprise, Grandma said. We already had breakfast, but there's some Enderman's crumb cake left.
Where were you? I asked.
It's such a beautiful morning, I thought I'd walk to the deli and pick up some fresh rolls and potato salad for lunch.
Where's Mom? I asked.
Isn't she in the house? Maybe she stepped next door.
I called her cell phone, and I could hear it ringing in the kitchen.